Well, it's another lovely day right here in Oklahoma. I mean, we've just had some fantastic weather. Well, greetings, brethren. It is great to be here. I saw something interesting in the paper. It reads, "Red and Blue America can't just go their separate ways." I don't know, you probably can't see this. There's a lady, I guess that's her husband. She's in blue, he's in red. If you could see it, the little dogs down below, they're happy with each other, but the people are not happy with each other. One of them votes red, one of them votes blue. Well, this article was written by Bill Maher, M-A-H-E-R. Yeah, he has a program on HBO. He's a liberal journalist. And I thought it was interesting. He's got a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal. Not an ad, but on the review. But one of the things he said, he's kind of a comedian, kind of a cross between a journalist and a comedian. But one of the things he said, "I would like to remind them of one thing. America is a family. And the definition of a family is people who hate each other without resorting to violence." So, I mean, I hope that's not true in this family here. And he says, "Never forget the single shining truth about democracy. It means sharing a country with people you can't stand." So, you know, I hope we're not coming together here being polite with people we can't stand. Seems like this is echoing, I guess. That's normal. So, I just wanted to say a few things about dealing with people. Jesus said it is impossible that no offenses should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. If someone hurts our feelings, then we want to get back at them, don't we? Isn't that what we want to do? Even converted brethren get caught in the trap of offending or being offended. So what does the Bible say about offenses? Well, we know in Luke 17:1, which I just basically was reading, Jesus said that offenses would come. So I ask the question, are you or me, are we an offender or a healer? Are we an offender or one offended? Some people think that to get more of the pie, that'd be attention or praise, that you have to take someone else's piece or their piece of pie so you'd have more. So if someone hurts our feelings, then we want to get back at them. I think that's pretty well, it could be agreed, a tit for tat. You know, you hit me with something, I'm going to come back with a little bit more. Even converted brethren get caught in this trap of offending or being offended. Yeah, this tit for tat, that's a dangerous thing to ever get involved in. Married people get in that, and it never comes out good that I've seen. So we go around in a pouting, huffy attitude. Yeah. Well, what I call huffy, The Oxford says, annoyed, excuse me, annoyed or irritated and quick to take offense at petty things. Yeah, quick to take offense or to give offense. You know, it's hard to take responsibility when we've said the wrong thing, done the same thing. You know, we have to learn to negotiate so that we can take advantage. Sometimes life just dishes out more than we can bear. And sometimes brethren dish out more than we can bear. You know, yeah, our own brethren can get us. So I want to talk today about dealing with offenses. How do we deal with them? Jesus said offenses would come. How do we deal with them? We'd like to turn to Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs chapter 18. And we see here the first to plead his cause. Proverbs 18, verse 13. He who answers a matter before he hears it is a folly and a shame to him. In other words, sometimes we don't even listen and really hear what's being said. And in verse 17, the first one to plead his cause seems right. Well, you know, that sounds right. I'm with you. Whatever it is, I agree. You've been mistreated. Until his neighbor comes and examines him. Well, the word cause there, it has the meaning like a contest or an adversary. See, the first one to plead his cause. That can mean like it turns into a contest or an adversary. Of course, we know who the original adversary was, and how did that turn out? We could read about that, which we won't turn there today. Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. And then, you know, we realize that then we begin to talk. So-and-so said this or that or did this. And wow, you've been mistreated. What are we going to do? You know, you've been mistreated here. Anyway, in verse 17, the first one, plead his cause, seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. In other words, the rest of the story isn't. The word there, examine, it means to penetrate, to find out, to search, and to see. There's always the other side of the story, isn't it? In a divorce case, a friendship case, there's always another side. And in verse 19, what's it say? A brother offended is harder to win than a strong city. Offended there, the word means the idea of expansion to break away. An offended, brethren, is like breaking away. The friendship, the communication even may end. Yeah. And the contentions. What did it say there in verse 19? Is harder to win than a strong city. And contention, the word there is like brawling or like the bars of a castle. I mean, you can't get in. The castle's barred off. Communication basically has gone Neil. Elcott's commentary says, "Let are like bars of a castle, forming an almost impassable barrier to reconciliation." Why do they have bars around a castle or a city? Just if you want to look at it sometime, 1 Kings 4:13 mentions 60 large cities with walls and bronze gates or bars. That's the way contention is. It can build up like bars around a city you can't get through. A friend once told me, this many years ago, nobody knows who it was, once mentioned that him and his brother have not talked since they were kids. This man was 50-some years old. Him and his brother had so much difficulty as children, they had not talked. You know, that is pretty sad, really. But brethren, we are spiritual blood brothers. That was his own blood brother. Well, you say, well, we're not spiritually blood brothers, but we are brothers spiritually. Look at Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. And we see it's talking about leaving your gift. Matthew chapter 12. Did I say that right? Yeah. No, I said it wrong. It's Matthew 5. Matthew chapter 5. And in verse 5:23. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you. If you're bringing a gift to the altar, whether it's tithes, whether it's service, well, I'm serving the church, I'm doing this, and you remember, what does it say there in verse 23? Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, maybe that's the time to do something. We remember what God says. We won't be able to turn to all these scriptures, but Psalms 130 in verse 3, it says, if you, Lord, should mark iniquities, who would be able to stand? We're the same way. If we mark iniquities, someone's has offended us. But in verse 4 of that chapter, it says, but God is there for forgiveness. Yes. Physical or spiritual service is not worth giving if a brother is offended. Yeah. Well, look what a bunch of service I do. I work at the church. I tithe. I do all these great things. But if you have a brother offended, he's saying, what good would that do? He says in verse 24, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. The gift's not going to mean anything if you have this strife between two brethren. Remember what Jesus said, that you have neglected the weightier matters of the law. You've neglected justice, mercy, and faith. Well, you can be keeping the law and neglecting the weightier matters. Remember in James chapter 2, verse 13, it says, mercy trumps over judgment. Yeah, it says mercy trumps over judgment. The Pharisees, the law trumped everything. Of course, they didn't keep it properly. When you go before God, or you're standing at the altar, we go before God, we can go directly to God's altar. Jesus Christ has made that possible. But when we're standing there, that's the right time for reconciliation or to make that commitment. Time for self-scrutiny. Is that such a word? Like scrutinize? Well, anyway, some commentary I read actually used that word, and I think, wow, that went above my pay grade. Our words should spring from love, not competition, not, hey, I've got to have my way, is it? Let's look a little farther at that in Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 1, I believe will be in verse 10. And it's basically saying, what good are your sacrifices if you live like Sodom? What good are your sacrifices? Isaiah chapter 1 in verse 10. Hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Now, he was talking to Judah, but comparing them. And we know in the book of Revelation that Jerusalem's compared to Sodom and Gomorrah. So he was comparing Israel to Sodom and Gomorrah. Give ear to the law of our God. You rulers of Sodom, give ear to the law of our God. You people of Gomorrah, to what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices to me? What good are your sacrifices if you're living like Sodom? Or your brother's offended, or you're going around offended, all huffy and mad and have an attitude. That's not even good at home, is it? I mean, you get in an attitude and then, you know, your wife's the only one there to take it out on. That's never good. So what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices to me, says the Lord? I've had enough of your burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed cattle. I do not delight in the blood of bulls or the lambs of goats. Well, we don't physically sacrifice animals now, but we do make spiritual sacrifices. And what good are they if we're not living as God would direct us to do? Well, you know, our words should spring from love. Okay, I read verse 11. What good are your sacrifices? And then what about verse 12? When you come to appear before me, when we come to appear before God, that could be today, that could be at home when we're going to pray to our God, our Father, our Lord Jesus Christ. When you come to appear before me, who has required this from your hand? To trample my courts, where your heart is not holy. God's court is holy. He says to wash. Doesn't he say that in verse 16? Let's look at verse 16. Wash yourselves, make yourself clean. Wash, the word means like a lavatory, a lav, the whole or part of a thing. Bathe yourself, wash yourself. Start cleaning up your act. Reconcile. Do your part to reconcile. I know there's situations where maybe it's impossible to totally reconcile, but you must do your part. Remember in Matthew 7, I won't turn there. I guess I got plenty of time. I could. Didn't have a sermon yet. I could go on. But Matthew 7, 22, many will say, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? In your name and drive out demons and perform miracles? In Christ's name, we did all this. Well, I guess it's talking about false ministers that look like Jesus. But Jesus said, I never knew you because you've been sowing seeds of division and hurt. That's what Jesus was saying. I should read that. Matthew 7. Matthew 7, I think, I'm sure all of you are well aware of this scripture, Matthew 7, 22. Many, verse 21, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven. No, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. See, we're called to become God. So we got to start practicing this, living it as God's Spirit will help us. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many wonders? Look what all we've done in your name. Then I will declare to them, I never knew you. They never got acquainted with Jesus Christ. They never got acquainted, did they? Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Means violation of law, trespass. And we know that the doers of the law will be justified. So even though they were doing really good works, that was obvious to people watching, there was something not right there. So, he said, I never knew you, because they were sowing seeds of division as they went. So our first instinct when there's a problem between two people, what's the first thing? To shift the blame. That's the first thing, shift the blame. It's not my fault. You can't just go to church and make up for that. It doesn't work that way. And the big F, I call it the big F, is if I offended you, that's narcissism. In other words, if I, you're the one offended, I'm innocent. But if I have, I'll send out this fake apology. In other words, I'm not responsible. I'm innocent. You're offended. But the real answer should be, I'm sorry I was offensive. You know, back in my day, way back, we called it gaslighting, you know. The old movie I remember back, where the guy was gaslighting his wife back in the day when they had the gas lanterns, and he'd turn them down and make her think she was going crazy and just manipulate her. Well, the whole movie was basically about that. So you're trampling on God's law. And we're still in, well, I turned back to Isaiah, number one, chapter one. I may have read this through 13. Bring no more futile sacrifices. Incense is an abomination to me. Why would it be an abomination? because the way it was presented in this attitude of not respect and honoring God or his people. The new moons, the Sabbaths, and the calling assemblies, I cannot endure iniquity, and the sacred meetings. You know, we can be coming to God's sacred meeting and he's repulsed by it because of the attitude. You know, coming to church with an attitude. Way back when I was in business school, they taught us this manipulation of customers. You got to turn it, well, this product, it didn't work. Well, that's because, you know, you didn't do maintenance or you didn't do this or you run over a curb. And that was part of the teaching, was to reverse the blame. You know, that's just a common thing that's been taught, I guess, in schools, even from my day. And we were taught to advertise your weakest point. What? Yeah. In other words, if your car has bad door locks or latches, advertise how great your door latches are. Show pictures of them, you know, they grab in, they hold. Then if they fail, we got the best, so, you know, you didn't have the door shut or you was in a really bad wreck. I know at that time, we were actually T-boned in an accident, bang, right in the side. And the car that was advertising their great door locks, both front doors flew open. You know, and they had all these campaigns, what great door locks they had. And, well, that's just something that used to be taught. He says, bring no more futile sacrifices. You know, and you think someone's your enemy. Well, you're supposed to love your enemies because they tell you your faults. You know, they'll just tell you right out. Well, you need to know that, don't you? Sometimes it's untrue. So, you know, they'll tell you your faults. They're glad to tell you, aren't they? Well, we know the offenses will come. But God says, don't bring any more futile sacrifices with your attitude the way it is. So that's just things between us that can go on, and we can, you know, it's only natural that we would tend to be that way. I mean, I don't want to take the blame for anything. That's why it's always nice to be married. She said that. She did that. I couldn't help it. You know, that's what Adam said. What was I to do? My wife gave me that. You know, I'd look at her, the perfect woman. Am I going to say no? No, he couldn't say no. Well, that's it. We like to shift it around, but of course, it didn't work out well for Adam or any of us. But a second point I'd like to talk about is be careful with little ones. I'm talking spiritually. And little ones could be someone new, or it could be someone older that is still, spiritually speaking, not that mature. Let's look at Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. Yes, sir. Matthew 18. In verse 1. Matthew 18, verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? That's what we all want to know, isn't it? They're thinking, surely it's me. You know, be greatest. Then Jesus called a little child to him and set him in the midst of them. Oh, then here's a little child. And said, assuredly I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children. Well, little children, they have to be guided, they have to be helped. They want to do things, but they can't always do it. You will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. No. Who is the greatest? That's all one of the things that we'd all like to know, I think. Maybe secretly in our mind, maybe not. And verse 3, I said, assuredly, he said, unless you become converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child, in other words, you're not reverting back to childhood, but you humble yourself as a little child, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Humility is a tough one. You know, who is greatest? Humility is the greatest. Fake humility won't cut it. You know, you can fool people for a while, but it won't. In one of the, let's see, Beyond Today magazines where I read this, Under Human Nature. There's a lot of good articles in there. Do people read magazines anymore? I don't know. Or they just go to the computer. I can't use a computer, so I have to read the magazine, you know. Jesus used this innocence and teachability of a little children to illustrate the proper attitude for receiving God's Spirit or His kingdom. Okay, verse 6, that's where it says, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin or to be offended, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he was drowned in the depth of the sea. That is some serious punishment. A millstone. I just read some commentators on that. That is busy. John Wesley, explanatory notes, says setting up something to cause someone to sin. To setting up. Whether we would do it intentionally or just out of neglect of ourselves. Adam Clark commentary said that this was used for murder of a parent, either physical or reputation. This was serious stuff. You could get a millstone around your neck, murdering someone's reputation. Barnes notes, a mode of punishment practiced by the Greeks, Syrians, Romans, so it was something that was done. Like for insurrection against Rome. That could get you that, or crucified. So we need to be careful. We know that Satan's goal is to keep human beings separated from God. And, of course, his big goal was if he could ever separate Jesus from the Father. Well, that can't be done, but he can get God's people to separate Jesus from the Father. We know they're one. Okay, verse 6. I think we talked about that. He was comparing little ones who believe in me, be better for a millstone. In verse 10, Take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I say to you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father. We don't know a little one's, what's their background? You know? But when I was like 21 years old, first time I went to church, my family did not drink alcohol. I've probably told this story. No, I was like 21 years old and never had tasted beer. Yeah. That's pretty weird, isn't it? No, but that's just the way it was. You know, we lived out on a farm 18 miles from town. Wasn't a lot of exposure. And so we came to church, and a loving brethren invited us to their house. Go in, and what do you think the first thing the man did? He cracked open a can of beer and handed it to me. So you don't know, you know. You know, I had had enough knowledge that rationally I realized, hey, a drink of beer wasn't going to send you to hell. But it's part of you, you know. We don't know the background of people. You know, we know that new families come and all at once they don't come back. Now, that's coincidence or not. So, and I don't mean, you know, we don't want to be interrogating people, but we want to give them a chance to talk to us so we can learn something about them. And of course, even married people offend each other. Not just here in the church, but if married people ever get in that habit, oh, that's a... it's almost impossible to break. A tit for tat, you know. You said this, you did that. And then the next person's going to top it with something else, you know. But what about in verse 11 here in 18? Well, verse 10, he said, take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I say to you that in heaven their angels are always before the face of my Father. Verse 11, for the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. He came to save that which was lost. He says in verse 12, what do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, wanders off, you know, I think I'll go over here, the herd's here. Curiosity, or just not wanting to go with the herd, and leaves, and one of them goes astray. There in verse 12, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountain to seek the one that is straying? That's what the shepherd's supposed to do. He's supposed to go after the straying sheep. That's one of his responsibilities, to go after. And if he should find it, in verse 13, it says, if he should find it, sometimes maybe he never finds it. Assuredly, I say to you, he rejoices more over that sheep than over 99 that did not go astray. Yeah, he's going to rejoice more over that one that he went and rescued. And in one of the other gospels, it says he carries that sheep on his shoulders back. So it says, verse 13, even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. So in verse 15, moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you've gained your brother. Now, we could go on through there about the procedures, but that was my point, that you don't just let this go. You got there, you got your gift there, and remember, your brother's offended. What do? No, you stop. There's no need to offer it. Basically, it's worthless. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Here's Paul's concern. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Let's see here. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. In verse 4, then we'll read verse 7. However, there is not in everyone that knowledge, for some with conscience of the idol until now eat it as a thing offered to the idol. He's talking about meat sacrificed to idols. That we can eat meat sacrificed to idols, but if we're eating it because it's sacrificed to idols, like in worship, that would be wrong. In verse 1 of chapter 8, now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. In other words, just knowing but not changing is not what we want. And if anyone thinks that he knows everything, he knows nothing, yet as he ought to know. I mean, he doesn't know as he ought to know. He does know some things, but not as he should. But if anyone loves God, this one's known by him. Verse 4, now concerning eating of things offered to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there's no other God but one. So the meat from an idol, that's not it. It's why you would be eating that meat. I think we talked about the, probably in Proverbs, with the naughty woman's trying to entice the small guy, and she said, I've did my peace offerings, and as I understand that, I think Mr. Dowd reviewed this, that then you got to keep part of that offering and take it home. Well, in other words, hey, I got food, come on in. We got steaks tonight. That's not really what she is after, but okay, where was it? They're concerned in eating the things offered to idols. We know that the idol's nothing in the world, and that there's no other God but one, so the eating of the idol. In verse 7, however, there is not in everyone that knowledge. This is talking about people not mature enough, and they don't have that knowledge with consciousness of the idol until now. Eat it as a thing offered to an idol. It's still part of idol worship. And their conscience being weak is defiled, because it's like they're reverting back to idol worship. But in verse 8, but food does not commend us to God, for neither if we eat are we better, nor if we don't not eat we are worse. But beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. It's where it comes in. Things be fine for us to do, but because of a person's background and where they are, it could be a stumbling block. You know. For in verse 10, if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? In other words, to revert back to idol worship? And because, verse 11, because of your knowledge, shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died? In verse 12, but when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. So there are weak conscience and not understanding a person's background or their life. So verse 13 shows it is ceremonial food involved in worship. Therefore, verse 13, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. Well, then, if you never ate meat, you'd be a vegetarian. So all of us would have to be vegetarians. But he's saying that in a case like this with certain brethren, you could offend, and it'd be better not to be to eat it than to offend. And in Luke chapter 15, let's look at Luke chapter 15. In verse 1 and 2, Luke 15, verse 1, then all the tax collectors and sinners drew near to him to hear him. What? These are the sinners. The tax collectors were despised people in Judah. And they were coming to him to hear him. And the Pharisees, oh yeah, the famous Pharisees and the scribes complained, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. What? Oh, that's crossing the line. You're eating with them. You know, you're eating with sinners. So he spoke this parable to them. And again, we read this in Matthew. What man of you having 100 sheep, if he loses one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? So we see again here in Luke, we read it in Matthew, that Jesus goes after the strays. If the weak ones are having spiritual trouble or problems, we need to help. This isn't a time to be criticizing and to finding fault, because they'll probably already realize and have a conscience about it. Of course, if they really want to know, then it'd be obligation to tell them. And let's see, let's turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We had talked about this, but for some reason I wrote it down again. In verse 28, meat to idols. And as far as offending, the truth of God will offend people. I mean, this is not what I'm talking about today. We have to preach the truth, and it is offensive. Jesus spoke in parables a lot to the masses because he was dealing with them in a way to not be offending, and where they would just turn him off and walk off. I mean, we can do that. My mother, a Bible believing, I thought she'd believe anything in the Bible, and when it finally dawned on me about the Sabbath, I went and said, well, look, here it is. And I was shocked. She said, I don't care what that says. What? That's my Bible-believing mom. But, you know, she couldn't take that step. She will someday, because she never apologized for that, but she became nice and the wonderful mom she always was. So sometimes, you know, Jesus spoke in parables many times because you can just run someone off with too much at one time. Okay, so we need to avoid unnecessary talk or actions that might be offensive to a weak or a little one. Can't just say, well, you need to get used to it. Verse 29. I think it's verse 29. Conscience, I say, not your own, but that of the other. For why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? Question. But I partake with thanks. Why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks? Therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. In verse 32, it says, give no offense, either to the Jew or to the Greek or to the church of God. Don't give an offense. We're warned about that quite a bit. Of course, this is talking about maybe new or immature, which how mature are we anyway? You know, each one of us. Verse 33, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. So we always have to keep that in mind. Seek what profits others rather than showing off our own righteousness. You know, showing off our own righteousness. No. Remember the context here is meat offered to idols. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 28. Proverbs 28. In verse 10, just another warning. Whoever causes the upright to go astray in an evil way, he himself will fall into his own pit. But the blameless will inherit good. Kind of like we reap what we sow. You know, causing an upright to go astray. That could be, you know, we just go around with offenses until it grows into more than just the offense. Think of others and try to make it right. Another point I want to make is we know there's spiritual weak and there's spiritual babes. But we shouldn't remain spiritual babies, easily offended. In James 4, 5, and 6, what does that say? In James 4, verse 5, or do you think that the scripture says in vain, the spirit he dwells in us yearns to jealousy? So many times, offenses simply go back to jealousy because that's part of us. The spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously, but he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Therefore, in verse 7, submit to God and resist the devil. And he will flee. The devil is the original offender. So he says to resist him. So we don't want to remain spiritual babies. We're naturally moved to evil, and we don't want to remain in that. Now back to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 in verse 20. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 20, brethren, do not be children in understanding. However, in malice be babes, but in understanding be mature. In other words, we should be a babe in malice. We're not taking part in that. Don't be children in understanding. However, in malice, we can be babes. Malice, the word means badness, malignity, actually spreads. Yes, don't spread evil. And attitudes, that's basically what they did. Do not remain a baby spiritually, like little children who are offended easily, aren't they? We have to grow. And we know that God says that those who love me, nothing will offend them. We could look at Psalms 119 just to read that. Psalms 119. I think most all of us have read that many a times. Those who love God's law, nothing will offend them. But Christ warned us about offending, because there are times when people can be offended. Psalms 119. 165. Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble. Well, they have no stumbling block. That's the maturity we want to get to, is that nothing will offend us. Some haven't yet grown to that point. So we need to grow up. You know, in 1 John chapter 2, which I would like to turn there, 1 John past 1 Peter, 1 John chapter 2 in verse 10. Oh, I'm in Peter. 1 John chapter 2 in verse 10. And if we say that we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. I'm in chapter 2, verse 10. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness. Jesus said, you hate someone, spiritually speaking, that is murder. So if we're hating a brother, we're committing a murder. And walks in darkness and does not know where he's going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. So we don't want to get into that. We want to grow up. You know, a child is easily hurt. A child cries a lot, right? The younger they are, the more they cry. You know, a baby, everything it needs, it cries. Well, then it begins to grow, and there's not so much crying. The smaller they are, the more they cry. You know, and we have different responsibilities even as a child. You know, a 5-year-old can do certain things and can't do other. 13, more responsibilities. So we see a little child cries a lot. If we're crying a lot, we're still a little child, aren't we? Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 14. We see we have to start out as children, but we shouldn't just remain that way. 1 Corinthians 14 in verse 20. Brethren, do not be children in understanding, however in malice be babes, as we have read that. In the laws written with men of other tongues and other lips, I will speak to them. We have to start out as children, but we need to be growing. We have to start out, but we need to grow on up as time goes. We should not be having the ill will, a desire to injure whatever it is. You know, a little child, you take a toy away, oh, there are going to be repercussions, biting, kicking, hitting. You know, are we the same way? We get offended, we got to come back with a kick or bite. Spiritually, if a toy is taken away, you know, oh yeah, I got to do something. You know, it's easy when someone challenges you to get hurt feelings. I saw Arnold Schwarzenegger, which I thought, what is this? He's giving advice to people. He says, I think the title of his little talk is Give Up Hate. Give up hate. He said, that's a war you have to fight against yourself. And I think he was talking about that because so much is going on now, as we talked about. The nation is divided, red and blue. There's hate. Even in that article, it said that now the percent of people that would not even marry someone of the other party has gone way up, where it used to be like a low item. Now it's like 38 or 40% people saying, huh, I wouldn't even marry them. They're Republican or they're Democrat. In that article, it also brought out, if you wear a mega hat in the subway in New York City, you're asking for trouble. Or if you wear a Biden t-shirt down at the races, what are they called down south? I forget what those races are, man. That is not good. So we're a divided country, and what just my short time experience is the church seems to follow society, becoming divided. And you see how much the government has, it just in the last few years, became so much more controlling. You know, even in Oregon, they're putting small farmers out of business. And all the restrictions we've had since COVID, the church seems to follow those things. And just over the years, not to the extreme, I'd hope. So we don't want to remain babes. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. We're supposed to grow in the stature of Christ. Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 13. Verse 12, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, for the body to mature. And God has to give us freedom Without freedom, people never will grow. People have to be allowed to make some mistakes and to make choices, don't they? Ephesians 4:13, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure and stature of the fullness of Christ. We're supposed to be coming to the knowledge of the Son of Man, which is used over and over for Christ, the Son of Man. And even Daniel, in his vision, he said, "In one like the Son of Man became before the Almighty." So we know who it's talking about when it says Son of Man. Till we all come to unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure and fullness of Christ. That we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. Brethren, this is a warning. This is a warning to us, not to be taken in like this, not to be children. You know, wind, it said every wind of doctrine, the wind can do a lot of damage. You're living in Oklahoma in Tornado Alley, you certainly can realize that. Insinuations. People give insinuations. That's more powerful than direct words. An insinuation. Then they always said, "Oh, I didn't say that." No, but you planted that seed of insinuation. It says by trickery. That word, G2940, Strong's, means a slight, a cube, a dice. It's like a loaded dice. It's already loaded. You're going to lose. You're going to lose. It's trickery. There in verse 10. Should no longer be children tossed through and through, carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery, like a loaded dice, and a cunning craftiness. Cunning craftiness of, I think I wrote down some. Well, I didn't write that down, but anyway, it's a trickery, cunning craftiness. We know who the master of craftiness is, of trickery, of getting into people. There are spirits who want to deceive and offend, and these spirits use men just the way it is. Look at the life of Christ, what Paul was confronted with, and what eventually Simon Magus, and what eventually became known or as Christianity. No, those spirits who want to deceive and offend, and he used men. So people go around huffy and mad with an attitude. You know, an attitude. Oh, but it feels good to have an attitude, doesn't it? I guess I showed them. Yeah, an attitude. It's bad, but it feels good. And look at Hebrews chapter 5, where we should be. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. You have come to need milk and not solid food. We don't want to remain just on milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are full age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. We learn more and we learn to discern between what is evil and what is good. A lot of things look good. There is a tree of good and evil, and a lot of things on there look good, you might say are good. The whole world is geared to that. But I don't want to mislead in any way. We still need milk. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 2. In verse 1, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 1, therefore laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, which is pretense, putting on a show that's not real. As newborn babes, desire the pure milk. Remember we talked about milk, but we desire the pure milk. We need to review our conversion at times. Of course, the Passover is a reminder. But pure means undeceitful, unadulterated. It means sincere. That's the kind of milk we should be on. And indeed, verse 3, you have tasted that the Lord is gracious. Coming to him to a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by God, and precious. You also as living stones, verse 5, being built up on a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Remember when he said, you bring your sacrifice to the altar? Our spiritual sacrifices, if they're not coming through Jesus Christ, really, what good are they? I think God has made that plain. This is the milk we need. Not the milk of self-demanding. That's our nature, be self-demanding. Milk is the Bible. We need to stay excited about the Bible. Don't get involved in things too high for us and get haughty about it. Let's look at Psalms 131. Psalms 131, right before the prophets. Psalms 131 in verse 1. It says, Lord, my heart is not haughty or arrogant, nor my eyes lofty or difficult. Neither do I concern myself with great matters, nor with things too profound for me. Some things you'd say could just be too profound. He said that he is like a weaned child. Surely I have calmed, in verse 2, quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. No, surely we're like a weaned child now. We should be moving on. And if we're still being offended or offending people, we got the work, and it's hard work. We might turn back to Matthew 18 now in verse 7. Matthew 18, verse 7. And we may have read this, and we may have just referred to it. I can't remember. Matthew 18, verse 7. Woe to the world because of offenses. For offenses must come, But woe to that man whom offenses come. It says, woe. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. It's better for you to enter into life lame or maimed rather than having two hands, 2 feet to be cast into everlasting fire. In other words, cut off whatever the hand is doing that is offensive. And get rid of that, whatever that is. Whether it's your hand continuing to work on the Sabbath or whatever your hand is doing that is not of God's will. It's better to do without that than to go on, and the result of that would not be good. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out, cast it from you. It's better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes. In other words, if your eye is offending you, in other words, you're using, you're watching what you should not, seeing what you should not, then you need to stop using your eye for that. I think I was telling my wife, maybe not, telling someone, I love chicken wings. But if I have to go to a bar or to Hooters to get them, I'm going to have to cut out the chicken wings, right? You know, there's too much for me to see there that I don't need to see. So I have to cut that part of my life out. You know, that'd be cutting out your eye. It's a great thing. Your eye, that's a tremendous thing if it's used right. We won't turn there, but Job chapter 31, verse 1, he said he made a covenant with his eyes not to look after a maid. He cut that out. He may have enjoyed that, but that had to be cut out of his vision. So I think what the story is here, they're saying use our bodies to lift up, not to offend, not being a baby always wanting our own way. That's not the way we should go. So brethren, I just say, neither be an offender nor be offended.